Hello, and welcome to the BTG Podcast. I am your host, Jen Fable, of BTG Wellness and LiveLifeUnbroken.com. BTG stands for Bridge the Gap, and it is inspired by my own healing journey. After receiving 7 different mental health diagnoses by the age of 19, I quickly realized that there was a massive gap between what I believed and understood in my head and what I truly felt in my heart. And no matter how many therapists I went to, I couldn't seem to bridge that gap until I found the tools and information that I share in my one-on-one private sessions, trainings, and right here on this podcast. My goal is to help you begin to bridge that gap by bringing you different topics related to mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. And in case you didn't know, this podcast is recorded live during my weekly Zoom virtual healing circles. These are weekly virtual gatherings that are 100% free, and no RSVP is required. So you are welcome to come whenever you can and stay as long as you want. Each week, we open the space with a candle meditation, after which I will share with you my favorite grounding practices and lead you through a circle casting, guided meditation, and breath work, followed by a soul-inspiring gratitude practice. If you are interested in learning more about how you can continue your journey and experience my virtual healing circles in real time, please visit www.btgwellness.com/circle and join my free circle membership. Of course, if you like what you hear in today's episode, please remember to leave a review and share the love by sharing this episode with your friends, family, and social network. And as always, if you have any questions, please know you can always reach out to me through my website at www.btgwellness.com or through email or social media. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to the Virtual Healing Circle. With me, Jen Fable of BTG Wellness and LiveLifeUnbroken.com. And tonight, I want to talk about this idea between a relationship and an entanglement. Most of us don't really know that there is a difference, and most of us aren't sure once we know there's a difference which one we're in or what to do about it. So I'm really excited to talk to you about this tonight. So why is this important? This is important because Hollywood and Hallmark movies have glorified unhealthy codependent relationships for so long that honestly, most of us don't even really know what a proper relationship is supposed to be. This is important because understanding how you are unconsciously keeping your relationship entangled is a very important step towards being able to heal it. And this is important because without this information, you're going to start to feel lonely or isolated or confused, even when around other people, and you're not going to understand why or how to change it. So let's start, of course, by talking about what a relationship is not. A relationship is not about needing the other person to complete you. So, fuck you, Jerry Maguire. A relationship is not obsessing over another person constantly or wanting to spend every waking second with them in the name of love. It's not about feeling like you can't live without them and I'll die without your love. I mean, literally from Shakespearean stories on. If I can't have your love, I shall drink this poison. That's not a relationship. A relationship's not about giving up your wants, your dreams, and desires to make another person happy or to keep the peace. And this one came as a surprise for me early in my relationship and my marriage. A relationship is not defined by a lack of arguments or conflict. I was raised to believe that a relationship meant that you never fought. Well, that's not quite true. So what a relationship is? It's the ability to relate to another person in a way that's meaningful for both people. When we have power struggles, when we don't know how to negotiate or communicate, then it's often not meaningful to both parties at the same time, which is why we fight back and forth over who gets to have the meaningful moment. A relationship is about being able to relate to your partner in a way that's meaningful for both at the same time. It's about creating a space where you can connect and practice what's called interdependence. We're going to talk more about that in a moment. This is a space where everyone involved feels loved. They feel safe. They feel cared for. A relationship allows both people to show up completely free to be themselves in their messy, glorified humanness, in their stubbornness, in their obnoxiousness, in a space of intimacy, vulnerability, and respect. And a relationship happens when both people are alert and awake to themselves, to aware of their thoughts, their feelings, their wants, their needs, and they know how to share that in a way that's healthy and appropriate. So what's an entanglement? An entanglement is any type of romantic or sexual relationship that involves very, 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 very complicated interconnection of emotions and commitments between people. When I don't know which emotions are mine and which ones are yours, when I don't know what's in my realm of control and what's not in my realm of control, when I, in other words, have no boundaries, then I'm going to have this interconnected mess of everyone's emotions and commitments that's shared and smooshed between the individuals. And entanglement is characterized by very, very high levels of emotional intensity. There's a lot of passion, there's a lot of power, and therefore power struggles in this. And of course, there's fuzzy boundaries. It's just smooshed together. It's an entanglement. It typically involves very high levels of toxicity as a result of codependency, of people pleasing. Us people pleasers hate to hear that that's toxic. Of not having clear boundaries. An entanglement has lots of unresolved disagreements because there's no one who knows how to resolve conflict effectively, and so every disagreement becomes a power struggle. And typically one person's more committed than the other. And an entanglement will always lead to neediness. It will lead to loneliness. It will lead to negativity, contempt, insecurity. So to help you understand how entanglement happens and how we can avoid this and move through it in our own quest for connection, I want to get a little nerdy, because it wouldn't be me if I didn't get a little nerdy. So it's easier to understand the idea of relationship and entanglement when looked through the eyes of the psychology of teamwork. So back in 1965, a dude named Bruce Tuckman, who's a psychologist, he published a book where he studied the dynamics of teams. He found that teams that were effective and had a lot of good performance went through four main stages on their quest, and that is forming, storming, norming, and performing. We're going to go through these one by one. Now, any type of relationship or partnership is a team. You're meant to be a team. We all talk about a team, but we don't realize that teams go through stages and that each stage requires different skills. No one tells us this. So I want to go through these stages so you can figure out where you are, where you've gotten yourself stuck, and what you need to get to the next step. So stage one is forming. Forming is characterized by learning about each other. This is where you're dating. You're meeting someone. A team just gets formed in business, or it's the first day of a new like soccer team. You don't know each other. You're just, hi, how are you? Everyone's being polite. No one's making waves. Everyone just, you know, hi, yay, I'm cheer, cheer, cheer. The main goal at this stage is to figure out what makes us a team, to figure out who's who on the team. Okay, so you're going to be, I don't know, soccer. I picked a terrible sport to use as a metaphor. Goalie. Right? So who's going to be goalie? Who's going to be some other role on the team? This is where you figure that out. That's the stage known as forming. The group is just forming together. I'm going to take care of this part. We'll go out on these nights. We kind of come up with the criteria that makes us a team. The next stage of team psychology is called storming. And this is the one that we often get stuck in because we don't know that it's part of the natural flow of creating a team. Storming is characterized by interpersonal conflicts, by power struggles, where in the forming stage, everyone's being nice and polite. In the storming stage, you now have to like actually hash things out and figure stuff out. People are getting annoyed and things are getting on your nerves and you got to be able to talk about it. So the main skill set, the goal of this stage is to figure out conflict resolution inside the team. To learn the skill set of effective listening, how to give and receive feedback that's effective and feels good. That's not the same thing as constructive criticism, by the way. Constructive criticism will keep people stuck in storming. This is where we start to reestablish our roles. Okay, you know what? You suck at goalie. We're pulling you. Like things like that happen in storming. People get mad. Emotions are running. And this is where you get to reestablish the ground rules that works for the actual people on the team, not who they pretended to be when they're forming because you're all being nice. Entanglements are when we get stuck in storming. When we are codependent, we don't know how to give and receive feedback. We don't know how to effectively listen because we're all tied up in the other person's junk and stuff. And so we keep ourselves stuck in storming, and that leads to entanglements. The good news is that it's a skill set. When you learn this skill set, it gets you to the next step. So once we learn conflict resolution, once we reestablish roles based on the actual people, not on the glossed up version that we put on when we first meet someone, that's what gets us into norming. This is where we're effectively practicing the conflict resolution. You'll notice that doesn't say no longer having conflict. Yeah, it never gets to a point where there's no conflict. It's just that you're now having effective conflict resolution because you hashed it out in storming. This is where you're making sincere attempts to make sure that everything's happening to be consensual, that everyone likes it, that it's not a power struggle, that, okay, everyone's on board, we all agree. The main goal on this level is to learn how to have decision-making process that involves everyone in a way that's fair and equal. This is where there's shared problem solving, when each person on the team is taking responsibility for their role without having to be, like, told about it or forced to do it. This is where we want to get to. This is where we start to get into the realm of relationships. This is the stage we have to get to be able to move to the final stage where it's a full relationship, and this is called performing. Performing is characterized by interdependence. So what does that mean? So there are four types of dependency that we have to move through, but we're not supposed to get stuck in any one place. So dependence means I can't do it, you do it for me. Codependence is, I can't do it alone, you need to do it with me. Independence is, I can do it on my own, I don't need you, which we're all told is the goal, but then we get into connected partnerships with people, and then it becomes a power struggle of two independent people who don't need each other fighting for control, which keeps you in storming. The goal is to get to interdependence, where you say, I can do it on my own, and I choose to share the experience with you because I know in doing so, it elevates us both. And since we have developed effective conflict resolution and effective feedback when something inevitably goes awry, then we know that it's okay to stay in this place and maintain flexibility, where we have an ongoing dialogue, where it's just something terrible happens, you're like, yeah, you're being a dip. And they're like, yep, sorry, I was being a dip. And then you move on. So the difference between a relationship and an entanglement has to do with where in the process we get stuck. A relationship is about learning how to move through the storming. Oftentimes, we run away during the storming. Oftentimes, we think that that means there's something wrong. So a relationship is where we have a high level of commitment to the partnership itself versus an entanglement. We're still not really sure how to get our needs met in the group because we don't know how to communicate it effectively. So there's a high commitment to the individual needs, which is why it leads to the power struggles. A relationship has very clear roles and limits versus entanglement, where it's like, I don't know, I'm going to do this. And now no one knows what they're doing and everyone shows up. We've all been to that meeting where you show up and no one knows what the hell is going on. Yeah. That. In a relationship, there's high emotional connection, and you'll notice that entanglement has the same trait, which is why it's so easy to get these confused and not know which one you're in until you know which one you're in. Both a relationship and an entanglement have a lot of emotional connection, and so it's easy to kind of get stuck. A relationship needs healthy boundaries. It needs agreements and standards. This is okay with me. This is not okay with me. Is it okay with you that this is not okay with me? Let's talk about it. And if it's not, okay, let's figure out how to make it. In an entanglement, we have a lack of healthy boundaries. So that means that if you're showing up codependently or people-pleasing or a lack of boundaries in your relationship, then you're helping to keep you in storming and keep you stuck in an entanglement. I know that hurts. I didn't like hearing it either. A relationship helps breed some trust and safety, whereas an entanglement will always breed neediness and mistrust. So how do you know if you're like, am I in an entanglement? If you find yourself having the same arguments and nothing ever gets resolved and no one really knows how to resolve conflict or how to make repair attempts after we act like dips, you're probably in an entanglement. If you don't really know what the future is going to hold, if there's not really a lot, like there's a lack of clarity and you're not sure about the commitment of the other person, probably in an entanglement. If you're not feeling safe or understood, if you feel like you have to just, if I just be quiet, everything works. If I just shut down, everything's fine. If you find yourself saying that, just remain in the partnership. That's an entanglement. If someone always seems to need to be right, and if there's power struggles constantly, I mean, we're humans, it happens. Sometimes we get into pissing contests, but if it's all the time, probably an entanglement. If you find yourself feeling responsible for the other person's feelings, choices, and decisions, I am looking at you, empaths. We suck at this one. If that's you, you are holding your relationship in storming. Period. So what to do if you're like, shit. I think I'm in an entanglement. First, relax. It's okay. It's a normal part of team process and psychology. It's a bummer you got stuck there for so long. That's a bummer. And it's fine. Breathe. Begin by acknowledging that you're there and that there's a skills gap. That, I don't know healthy conflict resolution. Stop blaming the other person for sucking at conflict resolution when you also suck at it. Either commit to learning it for the relationship or get out of the relationship. Relationships aren't just about that high emotional intensity. It's about having the tough conversations. It's about sharing the tears together. That's what helps it go from storming into norming and into performing. If you're in an entanglement, you're definitely going to want to learn about attachment style so that you can show up more healthy in love, because entanglements are more likely to happen when you are either anxiously attached or avoidantly attached. Which, if you're not really sure what that means, or you want a recap of what attachment style is, feel free to go check out episode number 105 of my podcast, where we talk all about attachment style and why it's so important. Make sure that you know how to love. It's a skill set. My favorite resource for attachment theory and healing is the book Wired for Love by Dr. Stan Tatkin. Dr. Stan Tatkin does amazing work in the field of attachment style. And I love that he doesn't just pigeonhole you and say, this is what you are, sucks to be you. He believes that it's a skill set to show up more healthy in love, and he actually helps outline it for you. Great resource. If you discover you're in an entanglement, you're going to want to learn healthy boundaries. Sorry. You're all getting sick of me saying boundaries, but it's everywhere. Learn how to stop feeling responsible for other people. Stop the codependent behaviors in yourself that's likely going to require support from outside of you. Make sure you're getting support from people who have moved through storming into norming and performing. If your friend is still bitching about their ex, they're not there yet, get someone else. And if you discover you're in an entanglement, learn how to resolve conflict effectively. Learn about repair efforts in partnerships. About effective feedback, something called BIDS. My favorite resource for that is John Gottman. He's got some fabulous books out there. I think The Secrets to a Successful Marriage or Relationship. I can't recall off the top of my head, but if you look up Gottman, some excellent resources on how to make repair efforts, how to actually show up in a way that can help elevate you out of storming. Now, if the person that you're with continues to storm and storm and storm and never fills the skills gap, okay, that's helpful feedback. And someone has to go first. And you're the one listening to this. So sorry, you got picked. You've been voluntold, as my chorus likes to say. So some key concepts to remember. Remember that relationships are like any other team. You're going to go through the stages, like it or not. And that means there's going to be life cycles. Once you get into norming and performing, that doesn't mean when shit goes sideways, that won't potentially temporarily knock you back into storming. Something's changed. Go back. Pick up the skills at a different level. Keep going through the life cycle. Remember that entanglements happen when we keep ourselves in storming by not knowing who we are in the relationship, by not knowing what we want. By paying hyper attention to the other people, by sucking at boundaries, by having no idea how to resolve conflict, only how to run away from it or appease it. And remember that transforming an entanglement into a healthy, functioning relationship is 100% possible. 100% possible. It's a skills gap. It will inevitably, that skills gap, bring up a lot of your own little demons for healing. And that's awesome. And this seems like a good place to remind you to decide that you want it more than you're afraid of it. redefining what love means, how you show up in partnership, how to develop the skill set of a healthy partnership and stop blaming it on the other person is a hard pill to swallow. And it means you have 100% power to move yourself to where you want to be. So just decide you want it more than you're afraid of it. And that's always the decision that will take you to the next step. And as always, if you have any questions about anything from tonight's circle or podcast, you can always reach out to me through either of my websites, either b2gwellness.com or livelifeunbroken.com, or through email or through social media.
I do have a comment. In high school, I had this friend, and him and his girlfriend had a fight. And I was like, oh, that really sucks. And he was very excited about that they had an argument. I was like, why are you so excited? He's like, because I got to see a different side of her. He was all like happy that they got into a fight, because then he gets to see like what she does about it and like a different side of her. And I was just like, it's just so weird.
I love that.
And I was like, huh, okay. But yeah.
I love that. I just saw a quote somewhere also that said that it's not a real relationship until you've had an argument or a fight and resolved it together.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer, because those of us who were taught to avoid conflict can go years without that. And that's kind of the crux between entanglement and relationship, is being willing to have the conflict, to see that other side of the person and see if you're still okay with it and if they're still okay with yours, and how to come to an agreement together, knowing that this other part of them also exists and is just as valid as your uglier parts. So that's very, I love that. That's a very cool perspective. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Very cool.
Would you call like kind of like your description of what it is different with between parents and kids, or the same thing?
Parenting kids would still have to go through the same stages of creating teamwork. The difference in that case would be that the kid's always changing. You know what I mean? It's never the same child.
So yeah, I know.
You can go through that stage.
Different
like,
kid. Yeah.
Right? I mean, if they go through like a little spurt, it could literally be overnight that you're back into storming. I mean, the teenage years is just storming in general, because it's all about them figuring out their me, the terrible twos. So yeah, you would definitely go through it. And the team member is constantly changing. There is not a stable thing there yet. So it's going to feel a lot. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trying not to read too much into that, you know, and go, wait, we have this perfect little kind of setup, or everyone kind of, you know, fell together, and then it's off one day and you're like, what is happening?
Yep. One of the team members is changing. They're changing. Yeah.
Speaking of kids, so there was, again, it kind of relates to this. It was, I was, when my friend was visiting, we're in Lunenburg or whatever, walking around, and there was this dad with like a 2-year-old or something. And I think it was the, through went to go somewhere or something, and dad's like, where have you been there? And the kid was like, ah, like really loudly in the middle of the street. And usually I'm used to parents going, blah, 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 right? And dad was like, yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah. And that was that. And I was like, they were behind me, and I'm just like, I was like, wow. Like, that's a response that I was not expecting. It's an awesome response. I'm just not expecting it. Like, and they like went on with their day. They went to the same bookstore we did, you know, and the kid just like did his thing. And I was like, wow.
Yeah. Witnessing a functioning team. So, you know, it's no secret that my family puts the fun in dysfunctional growing up. So we didn't really have a lot of stability. And so what I experienced growing up wasn't necessarily a healthy function. There's a lot of entanglements, right? There's a lot of emotion. The love was legit, but it was entanglement because we didn't know how to resolve conflict. It was just smile and be nice. My husband and I went to dinner at a friend's house over the summertime, and it's, you know, mom and dad, there's two kids there. It's, you know, pure joy and chaos. And the response of the parents to the kids in moments of conflict or crisis was vastly different. So we're sitting at the dinner table. You know, the kids are bouncing around, the bouncy age, two boys, by the way. So they're like jumping around, they're eating. And all of a sudden, one of the boys starts going and like is legit choking. And without missing a beat, still like in the middle of the conversation without anything, just calmly got up, said to the child, you know, do you need my help? Kid nodded their head, and she turned him around and got ready. He ended up coughing it out. It was fine. Didn't have to do anything. Apparently, it's not the first time. And then she's like, are you okay? She's like, yeah. She's like, okay, I'm going to need you to sit down. Okay. And then the night and conversation went on like nothing had happened. And I'm like, it was astounding. It was so beautiful to witness, because that would not have been my experience in my home growing up, right? To see this healthy, where there's a crisis, everything's okay, and then they just go on without the power play, without the punishing. It's a beautiful thing to witness. And if you weren't taught that, I wasn't taught this in childhood, it's a skill set that we can learn as adults. And yeah, it is really cool to see someone who knows self-emotional regulation, who knows healthy communication skills, even with children. And it's, you know, it's not an easy thing. And when you witness it, yeah, it's like, oh, it was a unicorn. It's amazing. It was really cool. Yeah. It was really cool. Yeah. Very cool.
My question is, I mean, I was with the same person for over 30 years. And of course, my story is a little more tragic than most, or not. I don't know what anyone else's story is. But as you sort of go back into that scene of new relationships at this rightful old age of, you know, 52, how do you sort of differentiate between what is normal in a relationship and then what becomes entanglement, when maybe it's fear, or maybe it's a different emotion?
So it depends on where the fear is coming from. If the fear is coming because something outside of me is legitimately threatening, and, you know, to our physical survival, then that's legitimate fear. If the fear is coming because I'm afraid to speak up, if the fear is coming because I don't know how to resolve conflict, then that's a different question. And when, I mean, going out into the dating world, you get to go through all the stages again. You know, forming is the dating scene, right? And then inevitably there's going to be the storming part. And most people in storming bail and say, you're not worth this, I don't like you enough. And that's fine. That's dating. You have to like the person enough to be willing to engage in conflict resolution with them, and vice versa. That's kind of the goal of partnership. Do I like you enough to be willing to go through conflict resolution with you? And it's either a yes or a no. And if it's a no, I don't want to. I can. I don't want to. That's fine. You know what I mean? That, does that make sense?
I do. Yeah, that makes sense. I guess my bigger fear is, or my fear is, if you're going into that relationship, you're developing all that, you know, the norming, the storming, the forming. Is the fear of loss, or the thought of loss, so much bigger than your ability to conflict resolve or go through those stages that you just don't even give it a fair shake when you're in there? Like, you know, you go, that's it. Everything's terrible. I'm leaving because I'm going to get hurt here.
Right. That's where we get to be honest with ourselves and go see what the skills gap is in us. If we are afraid of that, then it might be unresolved grief that we can work with. We might have found that in our past relationship, as wonderful as it was, I didn't need certain skills, that we both had matching skills gaps and it worked. And then you take that out into another relationship, and now in this relationship, there's a skills gap. So it might be that there's something that's being noticed now that may not have been obvious before. And so if you're noticing that gap in you, if you're noticing fear that never used to be there, then yeah, absolutely. Go see what resources you can get to help you through that.
Very good. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Great question.
Earlier you mentioned emotional regulation. I'm sure you've mentioned these things before, but what are some resources that could help with getting those skill sets? Because, like, I find, you know, you've been doing the same thing for so long that your, like, instant reaction is what you always do. And then you go back and you're like, but sometimes it's too late to retry the reaction. So what are some resources that one can help gain the skill set so then your reactions are different?
The best one to start with is how to make repair attempts when you inevitably blow up. Right. It's, yes, we want to make sure that we're working on ourselves so that we blow up less and learn how to make repair attempts in the relationship, because you're still going to blow up. Even if you do all the inner work, there's going to be moments where that's going to happen.
Yeah. It's not more blowing up. It's like, if I'm annoyed, like, it's more like, not, it's not a romantic relationship. It's like at work. If I'm annoyed at the situation or whatever, like, I feel like that's coming through in my voice. And once the situation is resolved, I'm like, I'm fine. And I would like to, I guess I would like to stop and think, okay, why am I annoyed? I know why this is the question, but like, what do I need to not be annoyed and to be, and to resolve the situation productively, right? Or like to get my point across productively, or just get things done, right? Without like that showing up in my voice. You know what I mean? So I would like to just, I feel like I would get further and be a happier work day if I could regulate a bit better with that.
So the question is, how can I pretend I'm not annoyed, even when I'm actually annoyed?
Not pretend, because I realize I'm annoyed and that's valid. I guess I want to react differently. Like,
was something happened that was annoying to you?
Maybe. It's not that it would never, it's nothing ever, it's not big, right? It was just like, I think I can just be, you know, communication wise, I think I can communicate better my needs. Right. Instead of saying stuff with an annoying, with my voice being like annoyed or unimpressed or unhappy.
Right. So, yes, and it's still kind of the same thing. So what gets us from storming into the norming is to be able to honor the fact that we're annoyed and not hide it. To say to the person, you know, I'm really annoyed right now and I still want to talk to you. Like this, I need to go just calm down for a minute and I still want to talk to you because I'm just really annoyed. Versus how do I stop getting annoyed by annoying things?
I feel like I'm being passive aggressive, and I think I don't want to do that. So that I think that's what the end, what I'm trying to say. When I think back and I'm like, okay, was that passive aggressive? Was it not? Right? Just like, because I wasn't saying why I was annoyed. I was just like acting like I was annoyed without actually letting anybody know that I am and why.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. That's the difference. Sharing with them that you're annoyed and why you're annoyed so that they can come to the table to do the conflict resolution. If they don't know you're annoyed, they have no idea that there's anything to resolve. So yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
And I feel like that is in my relationships, I think, as well, where I'm like, well, we've covered this before, you know, in the future podcast, where it's like, well, they should just know. You know what I mean? And they're not going to know, even if you think they know, because I always think they know because I'm acting like I'm annoyed. So how would they not know? But like, well, not mind readers. And they don't always pick up on tone. And so like,
and acting annoyed so that they'll know you're annoyed is passive aggressive. Actually saying, I'm annoyed. You're annoying me. I still want to talk and resolve this because it's annoying. Can we make it so that I'm not annoyed, but I want to problem solve this together with you?
Okay.
Awesome. Right. So yeah, you have to actually admit it, which isn't nice. It's not nice to say to someone, oh my God, I'm so annoyed with you right now. I still want to talk. I need 5 minutes. I'm going to go in the bathroom. I'm going to breathe a few minutes. I'm going to punch something because I don't want to punch you. And then I'm going to come back because I like you enough to do conflict resolution with you. And with co-workers, sometimes we don't, but we have to anyways for our own peace of mind. And it's a great practice place. You know, it's easy to do conflict resolution with people that we like. And can you be flexible enough with your communication to be able to do it with people that you don't really want to hang out with, but, you know, paycheck.
Yeah. Well, it's usually just like a situation or something. And I'm like, I would like to handle it better and more productively. And I like the people I work with. And so I don't want to ruin those relationships, right?
Then so. Be honest. So in the forming stages, everyone's being polite. And in storming, we have to stop being polite. We have to share what we need. We have to admit that we're annoyed so that we can have this opportunity for conflict resolution. And oftentimes in us trying to avoid conflict and be nice, we're the ones not coming to the table resolve conflict. So we're keeping ourselves in the entanglement. And man, does that hurt to know. And it means we have the power to change it.
So kind of maybe going along with what's talking about. So once you get to the stage of knowing or being able to approach people to say, I'm annoyed or what have you, if you never learned healthy conflict resolution, and you're just sort of starting to maybe see through this group or other places what that looks like through boundaries, you know, establishing boundaries and stuff like that. But say you tell the person you're feeling annoyed, they have to step away, but you know the next step is to come together and try to resolve that. What might be some resources to learn those approaches?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm highly biased. I like my magic formula for setting boundaries because it's easy. It works. It's a sentence. That one's on my website under livelifeunbroken.com/boundaries. And it's literally saying, so you go to them, I'm really annoyed right now. Okay, you come back. Look, I appreciate that you want to leave the garbage on the counter. I'm just making something up right now. I appreciate that you want to just leave it there and deal with it in the morning. And I would love to stop having trash just sitting on the counter. Can we come to an agreement that we both like? Right. It's also helpful to be honest and say, look, I'm not good at this stuff. I'm still learning this. I was never really taught this. I would love some patience as I inevitably screw it up. And when you inevitably screw it up, do a repair attempt. A good resource for repair attempts is John Gottman, The Secrets to Successful. I think it's Seven Secrets to a Successful Marriage or something like that. And it works for any relationship. I would recommend it for any relationship, regardless. He has lots of books. He talks about things like bids, how to create connection, but he talks a lot about repair efforts. Also, Dr. Stan Tatkin. Those are my two favorite resources for anything to do with relationship healing. And then, of course, I'm biased towards the magic formula because it's effective. It's a single sentence. It's easy. And it's a great way to start the conversation. Right. When you don't know what to say, start with, you know, I respect that you wanted to do this dipshitted thing and it annoyed me. And I would love to have a situation where that doesn't happen. Can we talk? I follow Stan Tatkin. He has something called the Pact Institute. I follow him on Facebook. He posts some wonderful, insightful articles. I also follow John Gottman or whatever his is on Facebook so that throughout my day, in addition to getting these stupid TikTok videos about people telling you that everyone's a narcissist, I'm getting information from people who've actually studied relationships and have data to back it up over the years and are actually offering helpful tips. So those are my favorite. I like them a lot. Another really good one is Jack Ito, I-T-O. He's got one book called Overcome Neediness to Get the Love You Want or something along those lines. But I like his book called Connecting Through Yes, How to Be Agreeable Without Being a Doormat. Because often once we put up boundaries, we think we have to like fight everyone. But the Connecting Through Yes, I liked a lot because it's possible to be agreeable and have boundaries. We don't always know that. So that's another one I really liked.
No, I appreciate that because it's sort of like once you have sort of learned those different steps or boundary steps, it's like, well, if another person isn't, you know, kind of willing to be open to that and you're trying to meet with them to make some kind of agreement, like maybe understanding some of those other attachment styles somehow.
Might yeah.
Help you.
Right. Sometimes our wounds don't play nicely with other people's wounds.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes, like magnets, they kind of create some reactions, and the universe is hilarious and likes to put together different kinds of magnets just to see what happens. And sometimes it works, and sometimes they push each other away. And so it's all helpful feedback. It's all helpful feedback.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you again for joining me for this episode of the BTG podcast, which stands for Bridge the Gap, with me, Jen Fable. Remember, if you want to experience my virtual healing circles in real time, visit www.btgwellness.com/circle. And of course, if you have any questions at any time, please know you're always welcome to reach out to me through social media or through my websites at btgwellness.com or through my coaching website, livelifeunbroken.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.